Hey there, welcome to Broadcast to Post. I'm Jeff Sengpiel, CTO at Keycode Media. This is the show where we interview leaders and experts in the AV, broadcast, and post-production spaces. We're giving you the inside tips to grow your media workflows and business today.
My name is Kelly Gottesman. I am a project engineer with Keycode Media. Formerly, I worked in EDU for close to 25 years, teaching video production. Actually, a traditional choreographer as well. I taught dance, and so I have a great appreciation for storytelling, education, and all things video and production related. Today, as John just mentioned, we have two special guests. Jamie's not with us today, but John's going to kind of fill in for that, and then Donald Walker from the Detroit School of Arts. We'll talk a little bit about some of the visions that he has for the future, and we'll take it from there. But I want Donald, go ahead and introduce yourself post what I just said.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. As mentioned, my name is Donald Walker. I'm Director of Multimedia for Detroit School of Arts, a part of Detroit Public Schools Community District. Detroit School of Arts, for those who may be in the know, its newest facility was brought online back in 2005. It was a state-of-the-art facility. It's literally up the road here on Woodward, right behind where the DSO is. It was a $33 million video production facility, two full professional studios. One studio, Studio A, is nearly two stories high in its ceiling height, with more than 12 different light grids that are all adjustable and maneuverable. Right now, as we speak, we're doing an auto show inside of Studio A at DSA, and there's about 12 or 15 classic cars in there that are being shown off, and our visual arts kids are working with that auto show. So those studios also came with four edit suites that at the time was using Final Cut, whatever that particular version was, so it was state-of-the-art then. It was a fabulous facility that unfortunately never got maximized in its use. So you fast forward to today, 2022, equipment hadn't been used, and so it's now time to revitalize that program, and I think this is an absolutely perfect time to do it. Because of the technology that we have available to us in our classrooms and through this industry, the footprint that is needed to do the level of work that you would have done back in 2005 has shrunken considerably, so that works to our advantage. When you're dealing with students, the more space you have available to you, the more easier it's going to be to do the things you need to do. The opportunities that exist now in 2022 are far more than they were back in 2005. So in my personal opinion, we've turned something that was a negative into a huge positive, because we're trying to take advantage of all of the things that are available to us, the cost of things that have come down considerably. You can get the same level of professional equipment we had back in 2005 for almost a third of the cost, because things are so much higher end now. We're shooting in 2,000 billion K these days, right? So if you're in a high school and you happen to shoot 2K, you're doing something incredible. But the cost of that 2K is extraordinarily low compared to some of the higher-end professional pieces. So it creates an opportunity for educators and administrators who I think are very forward-thinking about this industry as a whole, not just shooting a camera or editing something, but all the things that come with this entire industry. It creates a really, really fertile environment for kids to find their way into content creation. We know they're creating content. It's not always the best kind of content. Hate TikTok. But nonetheless, we want to teach them how to be a little bit more positive and constructive and productive with the kind of content that they're creating, and get involved in what I personally feel, and I've had the opportunity to take advantage of, is an absolutely wonderful industry and a wonderful career that has given me a wonderful life.
Thank you. Quite a bit. The when you talk about content creation, what's your unique approach to that with your students, and how you put that together, not only just for content that you're creating within the school, but
post there to get them into the industry and even some of your broadcast strategies that you might have?
So I don't know that what we're doing is all that unique per se. I mean, we're still creating the same. We would be, full transparency, we're in the process of getting the funds together so that we can get both of our studios online and a number of different elements. Just to give it a little bit of context, the vision is to create a content creation hub for this for the Detroit Public Schools Community District. We've got a number of different schools that have smaller media programs in them. Everything is disconnected, and people are thinking in 29 different directions. My vision is to have one huge centralized place where content can be created, and other smaller schools can connect to us, outsource to us, utilize our facility for larger projects. They do their smaller projects there, and then we work collectively with our communications department and our marketing department to push out a new narrative about Detroit Public Schools Community District and its students. So that's the unique part about it, but the things that would be produced by the kids would probably be the same types of things found in anybody's school district. So it's just a matter of how do we connect all of those dots, right? And then that comes back to the great people here at Key Code and the work that John and Lisa have done with helping me shape the vision from a technological point of view. Don't have all the answers there, certainly, and so having experts like that who understand education and the connection between education and technology, they're incredibly important to this happening, and I'm very thankful for them.
Yeah, that's a vital ingredient. And you have an advisory board, too, that helps kind of give you some, you know, clearance on what's happening, currency, if you will, with the, want to speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that we have to always keep in mind is this is a, let me say it like this, and not to get all philosophical or anything like that, but this pandemic, if you're smart, there's a lot of things you could have learned from it. And one of the things that I personally have taken away from it is that you can't do anything by yourself. We're all so interconnected, right? And so we could not do any of this vision if we didn't have great partners. And great partners takes an awful lot of different kinds of forms. The advisory board that I have been blessed to, I want to say create, but just blessed to accumulate all of these great people, I've got a number of different people in, I think, almost every part of this industry that I can come up with. And if you fool around and introduce me to a different part of this industry that I didn't know about, you get the pitch to be on my advisory board, without a doubt. I just pitched it to one person just a few moments ago. She doesn't know. She's already been recruited and drafted into, into our advisory board. And so I've got people from every part of, like I said, every part of this industry that I can find. I specifically try to find people who best represent the look of my students. So I look for, our school is roughly 80% female. So I look heavily for women who are vastly involved in this industry beyond just being in front of the camera. I want women who are editors, who are directors, who are producers, who are engineers, who are in all aspects of that, right? People of color, without a doubt. I'm unapologetic about that because my school is 99.9% African American. So, and that is a underrepresented part of this industry. And I really, part of my mission is to push more African American, more black, more brown, and more women into this industry because I think we've seen through a lot of the content, I'm a big Marvel Cinematic Universe guy, and just in a couple of the movies that I've seen, that when you get people who represent different viewpoints, different ethnicities, and so forth into that creative flow, you get something magnificent. And so I want more magnificence being put into this industry.
Excellent. I resonate with that very well. The you mentioned that it's kind of a redo, right, of all things at the new DSA. How has John, Lisa, and others helped kind of bring that vision to actually get it going?
You're included in that, sir. So
I'm there now. Okay. But I'm saying these guys were there before me.
Oh, they are. So I'm a content user. I'm not a technology, you know, person. So they have helped me understand what are the technologies that are out there. But more importantly, they're helping me to find technologies that are cost efficient for a school. You can buy a switcher that costs as much as a school. And that's unfortunately what they did in the first iteration of these studios. They had a switcher in there, I kid you not, that looked like something that should be on the Star Trek Enterprise's ship, right? It was too much for a high school. We would never utilize all of that. And so now my focus is I want professional equipment. I want equipment that the kids would see should they walk out of high school and walk into a job. But I need to stay in this range, whatever this range is. And John and Lisa have done a fantastic job of keeping me right in a good ballpark so that I have a shot at getting the funds necessary to get these things online. That's the big part. And then after that, I just tell them what I want to do, and they start introducing me to a number of different vendors, and this does that, and this does this, and you just go for it from there. So you just need partners who understand what your goal is. They understand my goal is supporting kids, getting kids into this industry. It certainly helps that Lisa came from Specs Howard School. She's about education and about training that next generation as well. So she already had that vision too. So that was very, very helpful. So again, going back to my point about having the right kind of partners with you, I have the right kind of partners with me.
And if I can add to that, the other side of that coin is having you. Because, you know, I said this in the previous session, we can build these kind of technology systems all day long, but unless there's people on the ground that are going to be working with this equipment and have the vision and the goals and the requirements and the resources to properly implement it and use it, it just becomes what was already there, which is a non-functional system, a non-functional facility. So I actually, on a periphery, was involved in that 2005 build-out. We were, at that time I worked for an integrator that focused specifically on Apple technology, specifically Xsan and the kind of pro app stuff. So we were contracted by Apple, because Apple sells to education directly, we were contracted to go in and integrate the Xsan for this school, this new school that was being built. At that time, that was going to be the largest Xsan installation in the country outside of Cupertino. We got there to do the commissioning, and none of the fiber optic lines were there. They had gotten pulled in a budget, you know, pinch. The system, from day one, was non-functional. It never got turned on. Never got used. So, again, now fast forward to a few years ago when we first met, and Lisa and I went out and like, okay, this would be great to finally get DSA on its feet. Within a half hour of meeting with Donald, we had that person. We knew this was the right person to make this happen. So we were all in from the beginning to make this happen. It's about the kids, you know, and as Donald said, kind of right-sizing the technology based on today. The other thing to consider is in 2005, HD didn't really exist yet. It was there, but it was really expensive. So the entire facility was cabled and configured for analog standard definition. 6 to 12 months after that, all that equipment was outdated. Other pieces and parts got kind of put in to try and make things sort of kind of work. But again, it was way over the head of the teachers to be able to teach to it. And the physical challenge was the studio and control rooms are on the first floor at one end of the building. The machine room with all the equipment was on the second floor at the extreme other end of the building. So if there was any problem with a piece of equipment, the teacher could not do anything about it, because they couldn't leave the students, and they couldn't take the students up into the data center.
Can I add to that? The classroom was on the third floor. So If you have a class, DSA's average class size is somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 35 students. Well, there are not 30 to 35 different positions in anybody's regular shoot. And so you've got to have one teacher try and monitor three different floors worth of where students or personnel would potentially be, which was an utter impossibility. So going back to the earlier question about the vision for this, and I think for anybody who's thinking about this kind of technology involved in an educational application, you got to put the educational application part of it first and then build the technology into your educational application. So what we're doing now is we're actually stealing a page from how Specs Howard used to teach video production, and that is because the technology has shrunk in the footprint of the equipment, the largest control room, which is control room A, which is connected to our largest studio, we're turning that into a classroom. So inside the classroom will be the switchers, the monitor, the audio board, the mixer, all of that will be in there. So when the students come in and sit down into the classroom, the ability to teach directly to the equipment is right there in front of them. You put a couple of PTZs inside of the studio with some monitors so that students can see students as they're doing the work inside of the studio in the classroom for those who are waiting their turn to step into the rotation of the use of the equipment. Now you got a teacher who only has to go back and forth between a studio and a control room, who also has a visual cue into the control room, as Specs Howard just had a big window cut in the wall. It worked just as well. But now the teacher has that ability to see, and if they need to intervene for whatever reason, we've got shorter coverage time, right? Everything is right where it needs to be. And oh, by the way, the server information that used to be on the second floor is now across the hall. So if there's a need for that to be dealt with by the teacher, again, he or she can just go across the hall. We've condensed and consolidated and made it easy for the teacher to do what he or she has to do, which is to teach the kids.
That's a great point, how that drives the technology that's needed. Through the whole pandemic and trying to teach, you know, production, what are some things that you grappled with, learned, and maybe are going to keep somewhere in your mix as you build this new facility out?
I have to give all credit to our teachers who are incredibly creative. Clearly, we could not do video production in a standard sense and teach it in a standard sense during the pandemic. So what they did was they literally turned kids' phones into mini production and editing components, if you will. They found every app underneath the sun that could operate on the kids' phone, and they would tell the kids to utilize footage from around their environment, and they would teach them the skills utilizing whatever content they could have and be very creative about how that content was being applied. So that was one of the biggest things that we were able to do in terms of that aspect of video production, getting a little camera work in there, that kind of thing. We were also fortunate, going back to partners again, we were fortunate and are fortunate to partner with the City of Detroit Media Department, who was working on a show that kind of is like, for those of us who might be old enough to remember The Electric Company from way back in the day. Okay, I got a couple of heads that nodded for that. All right, this would be a 2022 version of The Electric Company, but they were doing it or in a position to do it remotely. So they were able to bring the kids online, they would bring Premiere Pro up, share the screen, and at least talk through how the editing process was being done. So kids would at least have an opportunity to see that. And there were other components about it that they were able to do remotely. Kids were able to send in scripts, so they worked the written aspect of it, things of that nature. How does that factor into what we will do going forward? I'm looking at anything and everything that allows any kind of remote access. We are 90% complete on an online radio station as well. A large part of my background is in radio broadcast. So when we bring our online station online, there is a feature that will allow remote tie-ins for the kids to be able to tie directly into the radio station and manipulate all the programming from there. The one thing I have to double check is whether or not they could actually do a voiceover over the phone in some kind of capacity. But if the voices are already there, they can manipulate all the content, plug it in, and literally program the station from home. The challenge is what we've dealt with, and it's been illustrated even more so with COVID, is the digital divide that exists in the city of Detroit. So that we will, quite frankly, I don't know how to get past that just yet, but give me a week, I'll figure it out, I hope.
And if I can just expand on that, the whole point of kind of remote opportunities, remote access, really comes down to network access, right? So obviously in an organization like Detroit Public Schools, as with any corporate or large organization, network security is untouchably top priority. We always come in during these pre-sales opportunities and meetings and want to meet with those IT people as early as possible. First of all, to start to explain what we're looking to do either on their network or with a separate network in their facility, but more important, understand what requirements are necessary for that kind of remote access. It's a can of worms that IT departments are very, very hesitant to open, because once you open up a port on a network, it's an open port, and it's something that they have to be very aware of. So we take that very seriously. We walk in with a great deal of respect for IT departments. We do not ever want to be the enemy. We're here to help facilitate and put things together. But it's a critical, critical part of the conversation during the pre-sales process is making sure that whoever is managing a facility's network, that they're part of that conversation sooner than later.
You mentioned early on that this idea is going to be a hub for other satellite schools in the Detroit school system, something like that. As well as you mentioned the digital divide, do you see that kind of helping in some capacity get through the divide that's regionally?
My hope is that as we bring more of this kind of technology into our schools and into, as this as an example, this program, that it's going to push for that divide to close. It's quite frankly, it's a mountain that I have yet to figure out how to exactly climb, but it starts at minimum with introducing the kids to the technology. They won't necessarily see this kind of thing at home, obviously, but they need to see it. You can't be or you can't use in the future or think about using in the future what you've never seen before, right? And so one of our jobs from an educational side of the fence is to introduce them to everything. And if we don't have the answer for how to get across that divide, these wonderful, inventive, bright, intelligent, creative, intuitive kids from all walks of life, someone will figure it out.
You mentioned also, or we all mentioned challenges, and a lot of it's financial, right? Getting the money to bring that vision to life. How do you approach that challenge and keep your faith, if you will, to making it happen?
I beg. I'm just being honest with you. No, a lot of it is we're very fortunate. We have a foundation that's attached to our district, Detroit Public Schools Foundation. So I've been working with them considerably to set up an account separate from so that they get to act as our fiduciary for monies. And with them, they are helping me to tap into a lot of the nonprofit and more philanthropic organizations that exist. But I'll be honest with you, I sell and pitch to anyone who I can sell and pitch to. I look to get in front of anyone who I can and explain the vision as best I possibly can. We've so far racked up in this year, which I count this as a win, we'll have $150,000 towards our goal collected thus far. We've got a long road to hold, but you got to start somewhere, right? And how do you keep the faith? You look at the kids every day and see what they don't have and see what they should have. One of my biggest motivators, and John alluded to this, is that this came online in 2005. It has been, I think if my math is correct, at 16 classes that have gone through our school that have yet to utilize the equipment in the manner that it was originally intended. That breaks my heart some days. That angers me to no end some days. But both of those things motivate me because the kids need to have it. And I think those of us who do this work, we realize this is really great work. This is, do you really want to call what we do work? okay, we this is not work. We I mean, yeah, some of our bosses may like put it to us, but what we do, the creative aspect of it, it's fun, it's enjoyable, it's what life is all about. And these kids, especially the kids of Detroit Public Schools Community District, need to know that that is waiting for them too, in this particular arena, amongst others. Not to get too preachy.
If I'm going to add to that again. Donald and I have talked about extensively, you know, obviously the primary focus of a project like this is the education factor, right? The students are number one. That being said, there is a number of career opportunities available in this industry, some of which are not the creative side in the traditional sense. What Kelly and I do full-time for a living is a career path. Understanding how this technology works with regards to specific video and audio and media production is a full-time job. And if there's students out there that have that interest, there are jobs for them. In fact, we will hire them.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, right. So it's the idea that what the original plan back in 2005 was, based on where the industry was at that time, to where we are now, and the prevalence of technology at the ground level with all these students who are carrying phones and have tablets and laptops and whatever, the technology is already infused in our society. And so consequently, the job opportunities have expanded exponentially because there's other things that need to be done for normal media production.
Absolutely.
You mentioned timeline. So 3-5 years down the road, how do you see things shaking up?
Better than that. 3-5 years down the line, my vision is that at least one of our two studios are fully online, our edit suite is fully online, and in the process, and this is something I failed to mention earlier too, when we talk about partners, businesses are incredibly important to this process, because this is an ecosystem that we're building, you know, and it starts as early as middle school. And so I've created middle school media programs in 7 pilot schools this year. Gave them just basic equipment so that I could start that interest and seed that interest early on, so 6th, 7th, 8th graders. And then I'm pointing them back to DSA. Yes, it is a recruitment enrollment tool, but it's also a job awareness pathway tool as well. We can have a both and. And so once we get them through, they gotta go somewhere. And I want to be very clear, college is not for everybody. Whether you ever want to go to college, or maybe you don't need to go to college right now because you're just not mature enough for that, or it just doesn't interest you, college is not for everybody. And that doesn't mean you're a failure. So there's a lot of kids that if we give them the right training, and we have business partners out there who recognize that and have worked with us in giving those kids that training, and they're aware of the level of training these kids are receiving, why can't a young man, a young woman walk right out of high school, right into a job? Specs Howard built an entire 50-year career on doing that, taking 18-year-olds and dropping them off in the industry. And the age got higher, obviously, afterwards, but that's what they did. So this high school can do the exact same thing. And so to John's point, because there's so much out there, so part of my job is also to continue to, in that 3-5 years, continue to build our network of businesses who are aware of what we're doing, who utilize our kids in work-based learning experiences, and there's a natural progression of, wow, I really like what this young person is doing. I want to hire them. So be it. They're 18. Get them started on that career, and then if they want to go back to school later on in life, not a problem.
Definitely. I like the trajectory, getting them as a recruitment, but also just hooking them to get them ready for that great experience that it's going to be their DSA. The a little segue to Grand Blank. You mentioned to me about a student who, when you were putting stuff together, that kind of just gravitated over to you. Want to share that story as a little segue to Grand Blank a little bit?
Yeah, so Grand Blank High School had a bond package pass, and as part of that, they got to upgrade the video production classroom slash studio. So if Jamie were here, he could unpack the whole backside of that story. But when he and I first started talking about that vision, again, there's that word, he wanted to be able to do video distribution in the classroom from his desk. And at that time, he was thinking baseband SDI. I said, well, yeah, but you're kind of limiting yourself, and you know, let's kind of talk this through. So anyway, we got the program figured out. We put the design together, and construction ran a little bit behind on the remodeling. And of course, we had to come in on the back end of that for the installation because we kind of needed to have walls up, perfectly honest. So the goal, original goal, was for the entire project to be completed, installed, commissioned, tested, trained before school started that fall. It didn't happen. We were actually still on site doing installations as students were coming in the first 2 weeks of school. This was last year. So, of course, we're still dealing with COVID issues. We kind of stayed back in the control room. Students were up in the classroom. And, you know, we were trying to get everything connected and working and appropriately. So all of a sudden, one day, Jamie brings a couple students back into the control room. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, this is happening now. So, great, you know, we've got the switcher up. It's a TriCaster. It's ready to go if they want to start pushing buttons and do whatever. So they kind of start playing with it, and then they go back to the classroom, and then I had to go in the classroom to fine-tune a piece of equipment that was at one of the desks, and I turn around, and there's one of the students that had come into the control room standing behind me, and he's like, so that NDI stuff you were talking about, that's like over a network, right? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, does that have to do with IP addresses? And I literally, so Donald's that student, and I'm kind of doing one of these. As soon as he asked that question, I'm like, you now have my full attention. Because you're now asking the questions. You have that desire. You have something in your head that's got your interest. And so I'm going to give you those answers. 10 minutes later, I think the kid was like, okay, enough. But, you know, again, there's that passion from our standpoint as educate, you know, as people are helping students learn things. But when you see that passion reflected back or that interest reflected back, it's a win. Just awesome. And we're going to see that.
Oh, without a doubt. You know? And I just wanted to correct you. You started to say as educators, and you peeled back from that, you're educators. Educators are just is someone who is educating another individual. You are educators. And when you're in that environment and you give to a student, you're educating that student, and it doesn't require a certification or anything in that moment. Trust me, because that's how I ended up in radio. It was somebody listening to the educators who were educating me as I listened to these programs and so forth. So I just wanted to say that.
You mentioned that some of your students were currently working with an auto show in the studio currently. What's unique about that project? What's going on in there?
So again, the unique thing, going back to the idea of DSA being a content creation hub, DSA is a fine arts school. So again, dating myself, for those of you who remember FAME, anybody in here remember? Okay, got a few, okay. We're that this year's version or 2022 version of FAME. We have a visual arts department, we have a theater department, we have a dance department, we have an instrumental music department, we have a vocal department. I feel like I'm missing somebody. Of course, we have the digital media department. We have us. That's a part of theater. We've got stagecraft as a part of theater. So all we do is create content. Our visual arts students partner with our department, and one of our teachers, Ms. Morrison Green, who's a heavy producer. She produced radio programs and video programs and things of that nature. So she's partnered with other businesses who have worked to bring these classic cars in for, I think we're on our, discount the COVID years, but I think we're on our sixth or seventh year of doing this, where we bring classic cars into the room, and they talk auto design with the kids and the visual arts kids. And the visual arts kids, and they sketch and they practice their skills looking at these absolutely beautiful vehicles. Some lighting techniques are offered in lighting these vehicles in a more artistic manner. And it's a showcasing. Some of the radio and TV kids, as they still call the program, will come down with a camcorder and a mic and interview people talking about the vehicles and showcasing their information and their knowledge about it. So it's this wonderful cross-curriculum collaboration, try saying that three times fast, of the departments, but it's really stemming from our visual arts department and the students being benefited through that.
Fantastic. You guys have any questions for Donald or myself or John? No? Oh, over here. Go ahead.
Yeah, could you rephrase it?
It's a debate, basically, that you have the money, you pay for the best internet possible, and you get access. Right? I don't think we've reached a place whereby we could say, for educational purposes, these kids we're trying to push into the, you know, the next phase of their education should be able to access, you know, a smartphone.
In full transparency, no, I can't say that I've been involved or have had an opportunity to think about things from that point of view. I've been very heavily involved in let's get this machine created. But you bring up a very valid point. And again, and I've used this phrase with John over the last year and a half, I need to pandemic proof this. And so the more I get into, once I know I'm getting the money and we're starting to actually move on construction and build out, the natural progression is how do I pandemic proof this? And the only way to pandemic proof it that I know of right now would be to have some sort of easier bridge across this digital divide, actually close it, not just bridge it, so that in the event of some sort of networking situation that is needed, kids have the access to do it, or we have the means to provide the kids to be able to use it, whether it's giving right now. So let me back up and say it this way. During the height of the pandemic, a number of very philanthropic organizations and businesses came together and provided digital equipment for the kids to utilize and be able to do work remotely from home. In an ideal world, we would have that same kind of offering for students from a video production or a digital content creation point of view, except that the user end equipment would be more specific towards that function. The equipment that the kids were given were specifically to be able to access Teams and do academic work. So it wasn't high level, high end kind of things. But the natural progression of this is exactly what you're talking about. I just haven't reached that point yet, but thank you for putting it on my radar a little earlier. I'll be after it.
Yeah, and I'll chime in on that too, in the sense that, you know, when we're working with these kinds of designs and systems, we work from the core out, from the inside out, right? Because you've got to have the key components at the core of the solution in order to provide the functionality and capabilities at the edge, meaning at the kind of the outside of the onion, if you will. And those kind of devices, you know, cell phones, of course, are become very prevalent. They're still very expensive. Still very challenging, but you know, we look at technology like 5G, which is going to help kind of level the playing field with regards to network connectivity and speed. The actual end device, what that might look like and what that might be, is an important piece of that. but it's also an endpoint that is more likely to change more quickly over time than the core components that make the overall solution work, if that makes sense. So my hope would be, particularly in an inner city environment like Detroit, that once this is all in place and there's a proof of concept that the basic environment and system works to do what they want, and oh, by the way, we would love to have these extra things for these students, that there would be some benefactor that would help eliminate or at least reduce the cost of those for students to be able to function in the way that would ultimately be beneficial all the way around. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that 100%. I mean, it would be whether it's in a city environment or a rural environment where connectivity is just as difficult to have as well. The nice thing about it is you just got to have the time and the willingness to investigate. There are grants that pay for these kinds of things. For example, within for most career technical education programs, Perkins is the state and federal grant that provides monies to purchase equipment for CTE programs across the board. The wonderful thing about this is it allows programs such as ours to stay as close to cutting edge with equipment as possible. So people ask me, what's your maintenance plan? My maintenance plan is, part of it is Perkins. Because if I know I'm reaching a point where I need to replace a piece of equipment, I'm not trying to buy $17 million worth of equipment anymore. Now I'm down to buy maybe a 50,000 piece of equipment or $100,000 worth of a piece of equipment. And so I can fund it that way. Well, going all the way around to speak to this, when we get to that place as a part of the connective system of this CTE program, it should not be a strong reach to be able to have Perkins fund the kinds of devices the kids need to have in order to access the equipment as a part of the program. And there are many different organizations out there that will provide that level of funding, and I'm learning more and more about them literally every week, again, through my work with the foundation.
Yeah, if anything, the pandemic has accelerated that or it's brought that to the forefront even sooner than later. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, there from federal to state, local agencies that are out there to try to get money into the pool so that those that are hit by the digital divide or just low income or what have you can have access. I think the CARES Act was kind of a part of that too with mm-hmm. The pandemic. But a great, very valid point. Any more questions for Donald or John or myself? We have to kind of wrap it up, or we have one right here? Go ahead.
I love what I'm hearing. I've heard people about this. Bill over here, she's not being involved. She's not involved. Anyway, do you have any thoughts of collaboration with your neighbors about a mile away, maybe CT, CAS, in terms of...
Ultimately, yes, I'm willing to collaborate with anybody and everybody, but again, full transparency, I'm somewhat competitive. And so I see every single school that has an established program of any kind as my opponent, and I'm trying to win. And so I'm going through them until we get to where we need to be. And then I feel like, okay, now we can really partner. But where there's opportunity to share and grow, right now we've got streaming kits that were given to us by another organization, and we're going to pilot the use of them. And then we're going to expand the use, and CAS Tech will be one of the schools that we're going to be bringing these streaming kits over so that they can create opportunities to stream a lot of their athletics that they're widely known for. So there will be that collaboration on some level. Yes, sir.
Thank you, everyone. We do have to wrap it up. If you want to continue the conversation with Donald, myself, or John, we're around for a little bit longer here. Great having you, Donald.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for watching Broadcast to Post. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast to receive future episodes. Follow Key Code Media on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram to receive news on additional AV, broadcast, and post-production technology content. See you next time, folks.